Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And JD.
And Matt.
Hey, cool, we got everyone on board tonight. So, again, I apologize, last week we had a technical difficulty and lost the recording. So, along those lines, we made an announcement kind of last week that you didn't hear, so now we'll make it official that we are bringing both Matt and JD in to help us out going forward with the show. So congrats, guys. Welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
So we're here to talk about a movie that came out this week, The House, starring Will Ferrell.
Excellent.
I hope you guys went out and saw it. Right? Was that the movie?
I thought it was a new My Little Pony movie, but...
Oh!
I don't think that one's out yet.
All right. Now, we went and saw Spider-Man Homecoming, the newest movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the first one of Spider-Man in the MCU, but the third reboot of a franchise for this man. Let's do what we always do. Let's go around the room. Everyone give, you know, your initial reaction to the movie and, you know, what you thought, non-spoiler, at this point. So we'll start with Matt.
All right. So my initial walked out of theater feeling was, man, that was a good movie. I was just smiling, almost in tears, the whole movie, just how exciting it was, just how it touched on Peter's age. It was appropriate to the character back before he had all this baggage of dying aunt and selling his soul to the devil and stuff like that. And I loved the Vulture character. Michael Keaton was on point. He did really well. Yeah, the whole story was just what I wanted from Spider-Man and what I expected from Spider-Man in the MCU. His interactions with Tony Stark, I won't go into any spoilers or anything, but it was a good father to son relationship. And I don't know, being in Peter's shoes, a lot of my own childhood, I just felt like connected to the character. So I would definitely give this, you must see it ASAP.
Cool. There you go. High praise indeed. Let's see if JD shares your opinion.
I adore this movie. I think it's the best Spider-Man movie that's been made. I was so entertained by the film that I saw it last night late, about 10:30, and I was a little sleepy when I walked in, and I walked out well after midnight bouncing up and down. Like, it hit every spot for me. I can't say enough good things about it. I'm probably going to see it again later this week. Run, don't walk.
Sprint.
All right. And of course, the one and only John O'Grady.
Okay, so I was missing all of the teenaged angst. I mean, where was it all? You got used to it from the other films, and then they completely let you down with just a normal amount of that. Come on. And then it messed with the timeline. We're geeks. You don't mess with the timeline because we write all this stuff down. We keep meticulous track of every event that happens in a timeline. If you mess with it, we get upset. Also,
are you looking at your notes?
I've got this whole list. Also, Tom Holland looked age appropriate. What the hell? here's the weird thing. Tom Holland, age appropriate. Aunt May, not. Huh. Okay. So what? We took some years off of Aunt May and put them on or whatever. I don't know. It's just this whole weird thing, you know? It's like hot Aunt May and age appropriate Tom Holland and not enough. Well, you know. Anyway, so yeah, go see it. I'd say go see it because nothing as bad as a Spider-Man 3.
Well, that is true. Except for maybe Amazing Spider-Man 2. I don't know. It's a tough call.
Nah, that's not a tough call at all. I mean, we're not talking Batman v Superman, but still.
All right, so let me start off by setting the record straight and saying that I enjoyed the movie. It was definitely a Marvel movie. It hit all of the right moments that you expect in a Marvel movie. It had the comedy. It had A decent story, you know, some good character development, and it definitely a fun ride. And I recommend that people go out and see it. But that being said, I had some issues with the changes, which we'll get into in a minute. And, it kind of made me concerned for the future of where they're going with the character and, you know, how different things will, his journey might be because of the changes that they made. But that's me. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And,
I feel the rage boiling.
And I've been called an old fogey.
Yes, on Facebook, no less, so everybody could see. I was quite impressed with that because usually that's my wheelhouse.
So I can't get into it without getting into spoilers. So again, we all recommend it. If you haven't seen the movie yet, this is the part where we start breaking down the details. So there will be spoilers ahead. Spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it, you might want to pause the podcast, go see the movie, and then finish listening later. Or if you don't care about spoilers, then stick around. So I'm going to start with, as you said, John, the age-appropriate Tom Holland.
Who is 21, or was 20, I guess, when he made this film, but that beats the 30-year-old Spider-Man in high school from the first
one. See, everyone keeps saying 30. They weren't 30 when they took the roles.
Well, he acted 30.
Which one are you talking about?
I think the first one. Garfield was actually towards 30, wasn't he? I think Garfield was older than...
Yeah, 20. I mean, it's funny because people say that, but Garfield, because like when Garfield first got the role, people said, oh, they went a little younger. Garfield was actually older than Tobey Maguire when he took the role. So, you know, by a year, but he was still older. But yeah, no, I think Tom Holland did an excellent job, just like in Civil War. You know, I think Matt said, you know, he made you, feel the part, you know. I think they did a great job of the duality of the character, showing that really in a good light for the first time where, you know, Peter kind of hates being Peter and loves being Spider-Man, you know. You guys agree, disagree?
Well, they harped on that because of, what's her name? The love interest, not Zendaya.
Liz? Was that one?
Yeah, Liz, yeah, she wanted to see or talk to Spider-Man, and he's like, and his friend is sitting there telling him, go ahead, do it, you know, become Spider-Man, tell her, you know, to get the girl. And of course, that's kind of like the Superman, Clark Kent, Lois triangle, you know? Lois likes likes Superman, but Superman is Clark Kent, and Clark Kent likes Lois, and how the hell do you square that? So, yeah, he, like I said, the teenage angst was brought way, way down, which is good because it was more a movie about a kid, an actual high school kid, feeling high school kid feelings, dealing with the fact that he was a superhero and he liked being a superhero, and that was it. There was none of this, you know, 40 minutes of, oh my gosh, I'm so tortured. What do I do? Maybe I should talk to the sparkly vampires because they might know.
I think you're wrong on one aspect. I think there was a level of teenage angst in the movie. It's just more believable when it comes from an actual young actor who looks like they're 15.
Oh yeah, but they brought it way. They didn't like highlight it. It's kind of the same thing with weirdly enough is Spider Sense, because in the first two reboots they actually, you know, like relied heavily on it and showed it happening and like hit you in the face with it. Same thing with the teenage angst. It was always, what are I going to do? You had entire scenes just about how he was feeling and how he was tortured. This one didn't hit you in the face with it. It was a lot like the Nostalgia Critic portrayed the Wonder Woman thing. It's like, okay, and here's how angsty is, and oh, this is going on for, oh, we're done? Oh, okay, that's cool. Oh, action? Hey, all right. So it worked out really good. And it was really appreciated too, because, and you're right, he did portray it more, I don't know, Tom, maybe it's because he's younger and he, you know, remembers high school still. But, you know, it was portrayed very well, you know, because not all teenagers are teenagers are more go do this, go do that. And very rarely do they sit there, you know, in sullen silence in a corner to basically pontificate or study how how bad they've done or how woe is me they are. They're more, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that. And then they feel the consequences. And that's basically what he did. He's like, he's a kid, but he was a superhero. So what do? He whenever he could, whatever he thought of, he did because he's a kid.
Wow. It's been a really long time since you've been a teenager, hasn't it?
I'm still a teenager. What are you talking about? In my mind.
Well, I agree with you, John. About the teenage angst thing was really toned down. There wasn't any upside down kisses. In fact, rarely any kissing at all.
Although they tried.
They did. But I feel like that was one of the strong points of this movie is that they just let Peter be Peter, you know, and he let all that girl stuff. It wasn't focused on as much as this movie, as I'm sure it will be with, you know, Michelle Jones, MJ, in the next movie possibly. But I agree with you at that point that because of that, they were able to spend more time on that aspect where, hey, I'm a superhero. What am I going to do? You know, I want to be an Avenger so bad. And then it was just, it's this coming of age still story where here he idolizes what these superheroes can do, not realizing that he could be better than that, you know.
Right.
One of my favorite lines was when Tony said, you know, if you think you're nothing without the suit, you don't deserve it. It's another way of saying with great power comes great responsibility, but from the viewpoint of somebody that's been there and done that, and he still doesn't feel like he's really living up to his own Iron Man, what he should be.
Yeah, kind of a callback to Iron Man 3. But you're right; they never said it. I was so busy with everything else. I'm like, I didn't even realize that. Holy crap! They never actually said that part.
So I really liked that. I felt like this was a teenager. Like, I spent a lot of time with teenage boys, and this movie rang very, very true to that.
You're sure you're not on a list, right?
Yeah.
I just want to make
it. Just everyone, just remember, JD is a wrestling coach.
High school wrestling coach.
Yes.
It just felt like this was real. Like, a lot of times I think adults enjoy reading teen angst, and to be quite frank, teens are not nearly as angsty as they are in most fiction. I think people enjoy reading the angsty stuff, but I've never been around a high school kid that's nearly as angsty as constantly as they are in the early Spider-Man movie. Like, it just felt more real to me. Like, there were moments of it, but they felt like, it felt like real kids to me.
Right. They're more angsty on CW, I think, but yes.
And this is coming from a guy who works with kids that age all the time, so you'd know.
Yeah, I mean, you spend a lot of time with kids when they get down, and they do get down, and they do blow their thing, they do blow their emotions way out of proportion. But that's not everything. Like, I think that aspect of teenagers really gets blown out of proportion and over exaggerated, especially by adults. Mm-hmm. It seems like when we think back to high school, we think back on the angsty moments of our own lives and not really remember the goofy stuff. And I like that this movie chose to focus a lot on the sillier aspects of the kid. Like, I really enjoyed the party sequence where Peter's trying to figure out how to talk to the girls, how to talk to everybody as Spider-Man. Like, that entertained me. Yep. I thought that's what a 15-year-old kid would do. I can see some of my own kids doing exactly the same if they had those powers.
Yeah. No, I agree. So then the next actor, the next part, the most important part of the movie, of course, is Michael Keaton playing Adrian Toomes the Vulture. And with that, we got a very interesting twist that I did not see the twist coming.
No, me neither. I agree with that.
So of course, real quick, he's works as a salvager in the movie. He gathers up, he cleans up the sites where the fights were. At least that's how he starts out in the beginning of the movie.
Can I interject into there just on that point that you're making? He's part of damage control or Department of Damage Control or something, and that's...
No, he's not. So here, okay.
You know where I'm going with this.
Here we get to the first plot hole of the movie.
Uh-oh.
That we can kind of overlook, because it's really not that important of a deal, but you go back to the first a season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they made a point of saying S.H.I.E.L.D. was responsible for cleaning up everything from the Battle of New York and all of that stuff. And the fact that all the people who worked on the alien tech ended up getting evaporated as well from issues of the radiation. And then all of a sudden they introduced damage control that we haven't heard of.
The United States Department of Damage Control.
Yeah. That was a little odd. I know they wanted to bring them into the MCU. There's been rumors for a while
on ABC
about possibly doing a TV show or something with them.
It hasn't moved beyond concept stage yet, apparently.
So, and to have, what's her face, be the head of damage control. Come on, really famous actress. Come on, guys.
You're expecting me to remember something?
Yeah. You're leaving me hanging.
I'm not leaving you hanging. I had
Misery. What else has she been in?
Oh, Bates. Kathy Bates.
Yes. Kathy Bates. Oh. Yes. Yeah. Like, cause that's also what threw me in that scene. I'm like, wait, she's doing a cameo in this movie?
Well, you know, I mean, this, it's basically, it's the MCU. It's the MCU effect. Like, you know, you wouldn't have gotten that if this were just a Sony picture.
So, yeah. So he's a scavenger. Damage Control takes over, and basically they kick him out of a job, and he needs a way to make money for his family. And he keeps talking about his family through the whole thing, and we find out at the climax, pretty much, of the movie, that Liz, Peter's love interest, is his daughter. So here's a question I had for you guys. You all watched the same movie, because I had one interpretation of the characters, and my coworkers had a different interpretation. My interpretation is that Liz was Liz Allen, and Adrian Toomes was her stepfather. But they never say her. But someone pointed out they never say her last name in the movie.
It's not even attributed in IMDb.
Right. So what do you guys think? Was that Liz Allen or was that Liz Toomes?
I thought it was Liz Allen the whole time until that reveal. And I kind of thought along the same lines you did, but the way the Toomes character acted, I mean, like, I don't know. It doesn't really matter if it's like his biological daughter or not. He would treat her the same. I thought it was Liz Allen. I thought they said at one point Liz. I thought they introduced her as Liz Allen in dialogue. I hadn't considered, I don't know, that did bug me a little bit, but I don't know, you see so many kids with different last names than their parents nowadays, right? That didn't bother me so much. I don't know.
No, and it doesn't bother me. I'm just kind of curious.
The continuity possible gap, it didn't occur to me till you just brought it up, to be quite honest with you.
Right.
Well, you know, in a lot of other articles that I've read, I guess most people are considering that to be Liz Allen. So, I mean, whether or not they remember something that we don't, most people are saying, hey, it's Liz Allen. So we can go with that for now.
That's what I got too. It's Liz Allen.
All right. Well, so we'll go with that for now. And as you said, JD, it doesn't really matter if it's biological father or stepfather. It could be either or. It was an interesting twist. And I kind of like glossed over that to get to what I thought was one of the best scenes in the whole movie, is the scene in the car when they're when he's dropping them off at the homecoming dance.
That was easily the best scene of the movie.
Yeah, Michael Keaton proving once again why he's the actor he is. You know, what were you going to say, John?
I was just going to say you could at that point you could have forgotten that this was a superhero film and just thought you were watching an incredible drama because. He was just, I mean, Michael Keaton's won a lot of awards, you know, Screen Actors Guild, Golden Globe, Independent. I forget. I don't know. He's won an Oscar, hasn't he? I don't know. But he's just so menacing. I mean, you know, I mean, no wonder he was a good Batman at the time. But, it just, like I said, I just, at that point, you're like sitting, you're wondering what's going to happen. That's the first time in one of these movies where I was actually wondering if somebody was just going to die, you know? Like he does such a very good villain, you know? And not the blue light in the sky thingy, not the, hi, I'm today's villain, villain. It was just, man, you know, I could see him coming back later.
What? He actually has not won an Academy Award, just so you know. He was nominated for Birdman, but he didn't win.
That's right. I thought about Birdman. Well, doesn't matter. He was incredible.
I so dug the cinematography in that scene. Like, the way it was shot and the use of lighting, like the way they played the traffic signals and using the red and green light on Keaton's face when they hit him with the red light when it occurs to him who Peter is. And then when they have the conversation, when Peter and Michael Keaton have the conversation, and it goes to, it hits that green light, so you get the same color that the Vulture character has been associated with throughout the film.
Yes.
Oh, it was so genius. It felt, that scene felt like something out of a Michael Mann movie. That's how different it felt in it. And it was so well played. It was so well directed. Like, that's easily the best scene in the movie. It just, everything comes together so well for this great little character moment. You know, it clicks, man. Right there, the movie really clicks.
It's a good thing, right? I got to go see it again, because I didn't even notice that. But I think, I mean, I'm remembering it now, but I want to go, I want to see that again and watch for the cinematography, because I, you know, because we're, you know, Dave and I are old. We don't notice such things anymore. We just want to see the fight scenes.
Well, yeah, I went to school for those things. So that's kind of why those things always stand out to me.
That's awesome, though.
It's also the shot of, like, from the front of the car. Mm-hmm. So you can see that he's got a gun in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's hiding it behind the seat so Peter doesn't see mm-hmm. it, you know, which also then begs the questions about spider sense, but we won't get into that just yet.
Have we seen that kind of cinematography, that attention to detail in the earlier Marvel movies? Or is this like...
Like, there's the scene in the original, the first Spider-Man movie when the cable car is falling and so is Mary Jane, and in one eye... You see Mary Jane. The other eye, you see the cable car, and it's almost like, you know, they make it look like he's got to make a choice.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that one.
But, you know, that's also something you can argue is done with digital effects, where this is just done purely by using a red and green light.
Yeah, that's more of like old school. This is old school camera tricks, like more of a noir-y, right, you know, type stuff, more so than, yeah, editing. That's more of an editing thing.
Right. And, yeah, no, and it's just like, it was such a great scene. And, you know, basically he's saying, I know who you are and I'm going to give you a pass because you saved my daughter once, but you mess with me again, all bets are off. So yeah, it's just so menacing, like, you know, just beautifully done. He should get nominated for this role.
So what else do we want to talk about here? Because I have, besides all the stuff that we need to say about this movie being like basically wiping away the last five movies and starting with this, because this would be a great one to start Spider-Man with, the Spider-Man movie universe with, I have a list of a ton of Easter eggs.
Yeah, okay. So I'll tell you what, I'll give you one of my issues with the movie, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or if I have a point. So one of my issues, and it's a fundamental piece of the Spider-Man mythos, was completely left out. And look, I understand third reboot, you don't want to redo the origin again. And I was totally on board with that, but they don't even mention Uncle Ben in this movie at all.
They
allude to him. Yeah, he's talking to his friends saying all that Aunt May's been through. Like, why would I want to tell her I'm Spider-Man?
But I'm saying there's a huge difference between saying all of Aunt May's been through and ever since my uncle died, she's been really worried about me.
I think that, I guess this is like I took this into subtlety, and I read a lot into Marissa Tomei's performance in that, and I think it's a lot of subtext. And I think the whole reason why Peter doesn't want to reveal he's Spider-Man is specifically because she's going to worry that he dies. And when he's been missing, and the way she freaks out, it's not just my teenage nephew has been gone for a few hours. Like, she freaks out. And if you know Spider-Man, you know why. And I like that they didn't just come out and say it and hammer it over the head, because it's such a crutch in Spider-Man, not just in the movies, but in Spider-Man in general. Like, they beat up the Uncle Ben thing to death. Like, and I like, pardon the pun, but I like that everything was based on subtext and subtlety this time around, and not just saying, oh, you know, not just doing what you said. And I get why you didn't like it, And that's one of the reasons, things that I really liked about it, was that it didn't focus on the power and responsibility thing and just keep hitting those same points time after time after time.
I'm not even saying they had to say the line, but, you know, they should have. But I'm saying just mention his name. You know, it's only been, you know, a few months since he died. Like, you know, they're saying that he's been Spider-Man for 6 months. So you assume 6 months ago, that's when Uncle Ben died. So, you know, there's not even, I mean, maybe there is and I missed it. There's not even pictures of Uncle Ben in the apartment.
Well, you know, they may be trying to, basically they're trying to right all the wrongs of the last two reboots. And here you've already got a subplot with Tony Stark, you know, dealing with maybe becoming a part of the Avengers and the suits and all. You've got the plot with the Vulture, and really you want to pack in as much action as possible. So I think they were basically giving us a gift in saying, you've seen this twice already. You know Uncle Ben's a thing. You've seen him get his powers twice. We don't need to show that again. We have the Avengers. We don't have time for that stuff. You all know the story. Here's some action.
So,
am I wrong? I mean,
no, I don't think.
Yes.
I don't think the story needed Uncle Ben at all. Like, I don't feel like his absence was a detriment to the movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I still think that's the specter of Uncle Ben that drives a lot of what happens in this movie without seeing it. Because a big part of this movie is predicated on the Peter-Tony Stark relationship. And Peter is looking to Tony as that father figure. And Tony even mentions a couple times, oh my God, I sound like my father. And he uses a line that my favorite line in the movie is when Peter says, I want to be like you. And Tony Stark says, I wanted you to be better. And that's something that my dad said to me constantly growing up. And now that I've got a 1-year-old, I think about this all the time, is I want you to be better than me. So to me, I thought that it's the specter of Uncle Ben that really hangs over this movie that really helps make it work. It's the fact that Peter is looking for that father figure that's missing from his life. And seeing it in Tony Stark and a person he probably shouldn't be looking to in that role that really kind of drives a lot of his decisions. Like, I think it's the absence of Uncle Ben. And the fact that it is such an albatross and it is such an elephant in the room that why aren't we talking about it, that it drives a lot of that. And like I said, I don't think you're wrong, but I think that's intentional and done for that reason.
But I think you're looking at through the eyes of somebody who has been a fan of the character for a long time.
Correct.
So you've read the comics, you've watched the cartoons, you, like you said, and I agree that even in the comics, it was a crutch for a really long time. Until Mary Jane became the crutch. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who isn't that delved into the mythology, maybe hasn't seen the other movies, this is their first experience with Spider-Man. The other side of it too is when there's no mention of Uncle Ben, then it kind of comes off when you look at it, you know, through fresh eyes, is that his main motivation for everything he was doing in this movie was so that he could impress Tony Stark and become an Avenger. Not out of a sense of responsibility, you know? And that's more what you would expect from a teenager, you know, who has these powers, as opposed to somebody who's had this mantle of responsibility thrust on them because of inaction.
Well, not out of a sense of responsibility for his Uncle Ben, but out of a sense of responsibility for doing the right thing. I mean, that's basically what he's trying to do the whole time.
And at the same time, those early Ditko books, it wasn't just the one time Peter was looking to make money or you know, do something, you know, that it wasn't always about that Uncle Ben thing originally with him. Like, he is driven by some selfish and some teenage motivations early on, and that trying to impress the Avengers thing kind of falls in line with especially the early Ditko stories and a lot of the stuff that Brian Bendis did early on in Ultimate Spider-Man. Like,
you mean like in Amazing Spider-Man number one, he shows up at the Fantastic Four building wanting to join?
Right. That's a great example. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that early Spider-Man would do. And the teenage Spider-Man specifically. Like, and again, I think this is a Peter that doesn't know where he fits in and has gone through a big trauma. And I don't I don't think that story, I don't think they wanted to go back to that Uncle Ben thing and really hit on, because he's not, because I'll tell you something from first-hand experience. Teenagers are the most irresponsible people in the world.
Yep.
And this is what they are. Like, we've been reading the 20-something, possibly even at times it feels like 30-something Spider-Man that has been dealing with this for years. 15-year-old Spider-Man doesn't have that weight. And the great power, the great responsibility is something that has to be hammered home with him time and time again. Because he's impulsive, he does make bad decisions, you know, and that's a hallmark of those early Spider-Man stories.
Well, and that also goes back to, okay, we've gone through this twice already, so I don't think that we all want to go through yet another 40 minutes of wasted time going over, Uncle Ben died, oh, he's upset about it, oh, he's becoming Spider-Man now, because we've seen it twice already, and... It just, you know, like you said, they're irresponsible. He'd get over it pretty quick, but his motivation, for most of this movie, once he gets over Uncle Ben, is going to be, and that's where they start this movie in the timeline, would be, hey, I'm a superhero. What do I do with this? Do the right thing. Try to help people, you know?
Okay.
And goof, number one, and goof off.
Number one, your opinion doesn't count because you're a DC fan.
Damn it.
Number two...
You only get one of those a podcast up.
Again, number two, though I agree with what both you guys are saying, again, I know the real reason is they're trying to separate themselves from the first two go-arounds, but it's like you don't get over the death of your father figure or the death of your husband in 6 months. Again, like I said, there weren't even pictures in the apartment of him.
Yeah, seven, 8 months, probably, but not six.
I'll let you know when I'm over the death of my father. It's been 7 years. So, you know.
Yeah, I just feel like Peter is a more hopeful character in this movie. He wasn't like Bruce Wayne, where Bruce Wayne just, I'm punching the Joker, my parents died.
I am so glad you said that, because I had that thought too. Is like, you want Spider-Man, not Batman.
Right.
Right. All right. All right.
Just before we go on, I need to address the people that are screaming at us from the pod, you know, from listening. It wasn't Kathy Bates. It was
Ty Daly.
Yes.
I always get those two confused.
Of you know, Judging Amy and back in the day, Cagney and Lacey fame, won a lot of awards herself. So yes, it was Ty Daly. She's a great actress. You know, so we messed up on that. We tried to get facts straight. Most of the time.
Sometimes.
When I'm not drunk. Yeah.
Hold on a second.
I can fix that, though.
Where were we?
We were addressing the people that were screaming at us that it was Tyne Daly.
Oh, yes. It's Tyne Daly, not Kathy Bates.
Yes. So if you're screaming at us, we heard you.
So, yes. Tyne Daly. We won't make that mistake again.
No, because, you know, Tyne Daly is probably... worse than pissing off Kathy Bates, really. She'll come find you.
So anyway, yeah. So my other major gripe I had with the movie, and I don't know where you guys are going to fall on this, I thought the suit was a bit much. And what I'm talking about is the AI in the suit and all the extra hidden things in it.
We were pretty damn close to the Iron Spider, weren't we?
Yes. Yeah. And I kind of feel like because they haven't explored all of his powers yet, when you then give him a suit that's giving him all this enhanced ability, you kind of lose exploring, well, what can he do without the suit?
Well, isn't that the entire climax of the movie, though?
Yes.
Is when he finally defeats the Vulture without the suit, and then I think that was actually a major plot point, or a major beat of the film.
Yeah,
is that? Did you get the big gulp again? Is that when you had to use the bathroom? You kind of missed that part, or
no? I understand that, but like we've said, they haven't talked about spider sense. They haven't talked about his enhanced reflexes or shown him being using them. You know, and all those like little things. You know, the closest thing we've gotten to them talking about it is he has to have the special lenses to help him focus because. You know, he's receiving all these signals he doesn't understand.
Well, I disagree with you. I think they showed all of his powers. They just didn't do the bullet time pointing out, screaming and yelling, here, look, it's spider sense. See,
No,
they didn't do that because
even the director said they didn't use spider sense in the movie because it had been used so heavily in the first two franchises.
Yeah, but half the stuff he did on that plane towards the end, I don't know that you could do that unless you had enhanced reflexes. I mean, I don't think they pointed it out, but they kind of, it looked like they hinted at it, you know?
I think a lot of this relies on the whole show don't tell kind of thing. I think Spider-Man is such a big part of pop culture that I think we kind of give the audience a good benefit of the doubt going in. I mean, I was talking to a bunch of my wrestling friends today at camp, and you know, none of them are comic guys, but they all know who Spider-Man is, and they all know kind of the gist of everything. So I think this movie kind of, more so than most superhero movies that go over the top in explaining everything, they kind of just lay things out there and assume you're going to get where they're going. And I could see why that could be frustrating. I did agree the suit was a little much, and that was going to be, I wasn't digging it at first, but where they went with it in the end, I kind of went, all right, I get it. You know, and I hope Tony didn't give him the exact same suit. I hope he gave him a stripped down version of it because it is a little much.
Well, the suit was hilarious. It's like, what can you disable all the limiters? Yeah, it's called the training wheels program. Come on.
Well,
names of the programs that were limiting him were just hysterical.
That brings me to another one of my plot holes. How did two 15-year-olds figure out how to hack Tony Stark's technology?
Well, they're geniuses.
Yeah,
they're going to, the whole point was they were attending a school for geniuses. So, you know.
Ultron was having a hard time hacking his technology.
Well, yeah, but you could say the suit was a rush job and all. And I mean, whatever. I mean,
I think those protocols were meant to be broken, though. Just at least meant to be discovered because they were training wheels, so they weren't meant to be permanent. Versus Tony Stark had this whole AI army, you know, in case anything did try to break into it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go in playing in the world. I think Tony Stark put a lot more effort into making sure the AI army worked more so than the unlocking the secrets in Spider-Man's, you know, which is weird to say.
Oh, here's one of the Easter eggs. Who is the voice of the suit?
Oh, we all know that, don't we, guys?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, say it then.
It was Jennifer Connelly.
There you go.
Who played Betsy Ross? Betsy Ross.
Betty.
Betty Ross in the first Hulk movie.
Tell me that she wasn't. She wasn't channeling Black Widow as her from the movie Her.
Well, I'm just going to say, I thought it was a little creepy because it felt like the suit was flirting with him.
Yes.
A little bit.
I thought that.
A little bit.
I'm like, really? I don't think this is going a little too far.
Well, it was built by Tony Stark.
So obviously it makes sense, right?
It sounded like a bit of her, and it was Amy Adams that did that, not Scarlett Johansson. I keep thinking because I keep messing her up.
Because you're obsessed with Scarlett Johansson and
Amy Adams,
Adams and Tyne Daly. We understand.
Yes, I am. Of course,
these are the women.
Scarlett Johansson. No, Scarlett Johansson wasn't.
Yeah, she was.
It was her, right? So maybe she took lessons from Scarlett Johansson, which made her sound like her, because yes, it sounded like A, she was coming on to him, and B, I mean, I'm telling you now, if those are the AIs that Tony Stark is programming, they're not just for technology. You know how most technology starts in the world? It's usually honed by the porn industry. You got to know that AI wasn't built first for managing a suit like that. I mean,
the latest real doll that's coming out.
But but it was nice to hear her. I'm sad that she was just the voice of the suit and not a callback to Ang Lee's Hulk.
Right, because that was a rumor when they said that she had come back to be in the movie. People were wondering, is she coming back to play Betty Ross, but no, she's playing a computer voice.
Yeah. Well, you know. So I wonder if she'll be back for the next one.
So JD.
Yep. Sorry.
You work with teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a Spider-Man fan. What did you think of their portrayal of Flash?
It was a different portrayal of Flash. I guess in this, and they set up this new, I don't know if it's a charter school or if it's just a private school. They never really explain that in the film.
Right.
So it would be a different, the Flash Thompson in that school would be different than the typical jockey Flash Thompson. He made me laugh. The character didn't bother me. Like, I kind of learned off his different interpretation of it. I don't know.
It was your basic real life type bully. They're not usually, you know, jacked up on roids. They're usually just kids that have bad, you know, homes.
I get what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of like that it avoided the jockey bully cliche.
Hmm.
You know, it was a different type of bully. So, I mean, I like a DJ bully. I've never seen that done before. That made me laugh.
You guys didn't go to the high school I did.
Well, compared to you, everybody's jacked up. So there you go.
Oh, score one for the O'Grady.
I'm going to put that one on the mantle above my fireplace. That was a good one.
Yeah, but I mean, it just came off more of a my dad's rich and I'm a jealous douche than it did as he was bullying him. But
those are the guys that I hated in high school. So I guess maybe it just rang a little bit more true for me.
Okay.
Like those are the kids that got on my nerves with the spoiled rich kids that were just douchebags. Yeah, so I guess I think for that world you wouldn't have the old Flash Thompson archetype, you know?
Right. No, and again, I agree. I mean, I don't agree. I understand why they made the changes they made. It was to make it work for within the MCU to separate themselves from the original series. Like, they had lots of reasoning for it. Just seemed like, you know, the question is, you know, because they're insisting on going with Venom, which means we could eventually end up with Agent Venom, but could you see that kid becoming Agent Venom down the road?
Oh, Easter egg time. The number on Peter Parker's, his locker. The number on his locker wasn't the number of the universe this time. It was 1184, which I think was the number of the comic where Venom was introduced.
Are you in a different podcast?
What?
Random. Oh! Yes, but I agree.
I got to introduce these when I can get them. There's so many of them.
I think I liked the introduction of this Flash Thompson. I like the fact that they are doing more cultural, you know, allowing more cultures and more races in the movies, where the other ones I feel like have been more whitewashed. And I appreciate that because I'm from Southern California and tons of, you know, being Caucasian, I was a minority, you know, growing up in my community. So I grew up in a high school like that where not necessarily all white kids. It was, I appreciate the culturally diverse crowd.
Right.
And the nice thing is that nobody really notices it, which is, you know, a good thing. And you're right. It made it feel more real. When I see movies like that where everybody's cast because they're, you know, hot, good looking, and tall, it feels more like a production than a movie. It gets harder to suspend your disbelief and start feeling for any of the characters.
Well, the thing you have to realize, I think a lot of these actors were cast because they weren't tall, because Tom Holland is short and they couldn't have anyone towering over the lead actor.
Except for the girls, because usually at that point in high school, the girls have already hit their growth spurt and the boys haven't yet. So that actually worked out.
Right.
It's true, right? I mean, you know, they played him as 15, right?
Right.
It was 15, right. So yeah, at that point, the girls are towering over you in college or in high school because they've hit their growth spurts and the boys have yet to hit that.
Which again makes me wonder for the future, because, you know, he's 21. He's probably not going to get any taller than he is.
He's going to go from baritone to bass in the next movie.
So.
Well,
It'll be interesting.
Another cool thing I thought, the introduction of the Prowler and him mentioning kind of subtly Miles Morales.
Yep.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's right. I like the fact because when he was with the weapons dealers, he was talking about climbing equipment.
Yep.
Again, so hinting at him being the Prowler. Mm-hmm. And then, right. And then he says he has a nephew that he's worried about. So it's kind of curious. I mean, and we can talk about that a little bit. Like, do we think they'll go with a Miles Morales Spider-Man? And then how soon? And then how is that going to work? Are they going to kill him off? Kill off Peter Parker like they did in the Ultimates? Or are they going to have them be side by side as they have them now in the MCU? Or the Marvel comics?
I don't think we know. But I mean, like, as far as like the business perspective goes, I don't think that they're going to kill Spider-Man. You know, I don't think anybody wants to see that movie. You know, I really don't. I could be wrong on that. But I think we'll wind up with a side-by-side, like a Peter and a Miles, which is more similar to how the Marvel Comics universe is right now. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we'll wind up with, because who knows how old the Miles in the MCU is. It could be 5, you know?
Exactly.
And they're also doing the animated movie.
Yeah. Matt, are you with me? We're both DC guys. We'd watch Spider-Man get killed, right?
Right.
Out!
Hey, if it brings in Spider-Gwen, then that's fine.
I don't think we're going to get Spider-Gwen.
Oh.
Because I don't think they're going to touch Gwen Stacy after the last, after the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's series. True. Well, after the Infinity Gauntlet, man, anything's up for grabs. Who knows what you know that they're going to use that to bring changes into the universe that they couldn't otherwise explain through continuity.
That's probably true. So here's a thought I had too. Okay, so we set up a world now, and it modernizing Spider-Man, bringing him into the 21st century, as it were, and he is a kid who's posting his videos online of him, you know, doing this stuff. You know, they made it now he's more of a YouTuber, right? He doesn't have a hobby of taking photographs. So, cool, that makes sense. It works with today's world, and he probably should be making money off of that, I would think, realistically. But that aside, does that mean that we won't get the Daily Bugle and a new version of J. Jonah Jameson?
I hope so.
You hope will be? Or
I hope there will be, yeah. No, I hope there will be. I think that, in the Brian Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man, when they first launched it, he did more with web content, so it would make sense in this world to have it more, you know, digital video based. It works.
Yeah.
You know, I think that'd be a good way to introduce him eventually.
He could be like a buzz.
Is that because of his buzz haircut?
Yeah.
That wasn't funny.
Hey, Matt made the joke. I was just explaining it. Oh, wait. We need one of these.
Oh, God. He found the button again. That is a good point, though, because that's the same problem that they're having with Clark Kent right now in the DC universe. It's like, well, newspapers are going away. He's always been a reporter, but, you know, how do you handle that? It's just, you know, you make him an independent blogger. Do you make him part of a larger organization? All those larger organizations are dying or, you know, in the current political climate being called fake news. So, yeah, it's just kind of, it's kind of hard to deal with.
But, well, there's always going to be news. It's just the format and how it gets to you. You know, I don't see that being an issue. The issue with Spider-Man is the reason he got the job at the Daily Bugle being a freelance photographer is he could take these pictures of Spider-Man that no one else could get. But now if he's all over YouTube, there's no need for someone to go get pictures of him, right?
Well, unless he's the one constantly putting them up.
That's what I thought. I thought that's what the title sequence kind of infers too, is that making all these YouTube videos. Again, I read into that. That's possible that it's someone is uploading these on other than him, but that's kind of what I thought.
Right, because that's what I was wondering. Like, they kind of show him scrounging for junk in Civil War. Like, he can't go out and afford stuff, again, because that's just a crutch for the character. He's always you know, lower middle class. But if he's on YouTube and he's getting monetized for those videos, you would think he would have had millions of hits and he'd be making money. So, well, maybe they'll explain that in the next one.
I don't think he's really interested in a job right now, so we might not even see that.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the other disadvantage. That's the one disadvantage of a younger Aunt May, is that she's still working age, so she can still have a job and be making money. I mean, she could always end up getting, you know, fired or whatever. But with an older Aunt May, it was, well, she's on Social Security, struggling to make ends meet, and Peter had to get a job to help support her.
Hmm. Although this Aunt May seems to be very capable and not geriatric and, you know, spry and very able to get a job. Or basically to go out to any restaurant whatsoever and have people pay for her food, making
so
it all.
So that brings me to my other issue with the movie is I don't mind them casting a younger Aunt May, but they overdid it with she's the sexy aunt, I think, in this movie. At least four times it was mentioned in the movie. And I think the joke got old the second time they said it.
I'm not going to touch that one because it's Marissa Tomei, and, well, it's Marissa Tomei. And I don't think they quite overdid. Actually, this wasn't the first time they did that. They did it originally in the Ultimate Spider-Man, animated series? They had Phil Coulson dating Aunt May in that one. So, you know, it's
but
not like...
There's a difference between Coulson dating Aunt May and everyone mentioning, oh, he's the guy with the hot aunt, or, oh, I hope you're wearing something inappropriate. You know, which, okay,
that's Tony Stark, come on.
I take the joke from Tony Stark, but...
Tony Stark,
you know,
would say... Tony Stark is one of those guys, I mean... The fact that he was saying that, and then the ending, which we haven't talked about yet, and it kind of gave me mental and moral whiplash. But it's Tony Stark at that point in the movie, and of course he's going to say that about her. You know, it was. I think what you're talking about is the point at which they, she and Peter Parker were sitting in the restaurant. And the waiter comes over and gives her another helping of something and says, it's on the house.
I don't know. JD, you teach young children. Back me up. It was wrong.
Didn't bug me. Didn't bother me. I mean, like, you hear kids make cracks like that about moms all the time. So I thought it worked pretty good.
Yeah. They're at that age. Their hormones are uncontrolled.
These were adults that were making these cracks, not the kids.
Have you been on a well, okay, all right. I know I'm divorced, so I'm on the dating sites, and yeah, that's the kind of cracks that I hear that the men are always making. So it doesn't really, it's still true to life, really is. Men are pigs. Come on, we're pigs, right? Who's with me? But yeah, so. I don't think they overdid it. There were only like two mentions of it.
Four. There was at least four.
Oh, okay. What are they? I mean, she did a good Aunt May. You gotta give her that.
No, I liked her.
She was doting.
She was really good.
Still worried about him all the time. Overly worried in a kind of something bad happened in the past, and I can't let you get hurt too type of way. So I think she did a good job in that sense.
It would be, I mean, I kind of attribute it to what if in the Wonder Woman movie, everyone in the band of soldiers in World War One all made an aside comment about her being hot.
Well, then she would have pulled them aside and pulled their arms off. I mean, you know, I mean, or hit them with the lasso.
I'm saying,
it's just.
What I'm saying is people would be screaming outrage, like, oh, finally we get a superhero movie starring a woman, and you know, they keep making this joke over and over again.
She wasn't a superhero, though. She was Aunt May. I mean, okay, you're younger, hotter Aunt May, but still.
You know what? I mean, I'm trying to make a comment in defense of women, and you're always talking about how progressive you are, and you're the one defending it. You know
he did a good job as Aunt May. Okay, wait. Okay, Matt, JD, what do you guys think?
I didn't think it was crass. I mean, I can't think of anything that I thought was over the line. Like, I just, like, they made comments about her being really good looking, and the kids were like, oh, you're in. They could have gone so much harder with that. You know, like, they could have cut Peter with that a little bit more, and they didn't. I thought they kind of addressed that she's, you know, older, but not, you know, and attractive. It just didn't bug me.
Yeah. I brought my, all right. My wife and I both watched a movie, and I usually judged if I can laugh or not, if she's laughing at a joke like that. And she was laughing, so I felt like it was okay.
That is a very, very good way to judge. Excellent. See? Okay, you're overruled. Sorry. Back in the class,
it's
Dave.
It's just my discussion point. There's no overruling.
All right. So we've gone through most of the movie. What'd you think? What time is it? Ooh, okay. So let's get towards the end here.
Let's talk about the surprise cameo at the end of the movie.
Do you want? I mean, how was the end of the movie first? Let's do quickly that. Well, how'd you think the ending was? Was it a perfect crescendo and denouement, or was it just like the Wonder Woman, where it was the big bang at the end that everybody was expecting?
Well, it's a shame we lost last week's recording where we talked about the book, the final chapter, the comic, where Spider-Man is trapped under the rubble and struggling to get out for pages and pages, and he finally gets out, where there was an homage to that in the movie at the end there. So I thought that was well done. Like you had said, you know, this is where I kind of thought they were using Spider-Sense, because he kept dodging the suit flying around. It was a good fight, you know. He proves at the very end why he's the hero, because he goes into the fire to pull Tombs out after the explosion, you know, so he's willing to risk his own life to save somebody that was just trying to kill him.
And remember that point for when we talk about the end, the credit scenes. Okay, what about you guys, Matt and JD?
I thought the ending really delivered, man. Like, I think that you know, it goes to the climax works, you know, the hero's journey thing kind of goes full circle, where he's got to overcome something, and he stays true to his morals, and he wins the day, and, you know, it works. Like, I thought it worked well.
My favorite point of the character of Peter Parker in this movie was right after finding out that Tombs is Liz's father, that he didn't think twice about what he was going to do. He just jumped into action, and from facing Shocker to going after Tombs right afterwards, I just feel like that was a really good progression on how far Peter came, that it concluded so well to me that I fully appreciated, you know, the whole thing, the whole fighting on Stark's plane and just how it went down, saving his life. Just shows how much of a good kid Peter is. Because, you know, a lot of people, they use their crutch for dead parents or dead uncles in a different way. They use it in a way where, oh, now I'm going to go towards, you know, drugs and gang violence. Versus Peter has a moral code and a character that isn't really seen, I feel like, in a lot of these superhero movies. So I really appreciated how it ended and just the conclusion overall.
Okay. Yes.
Did you have something to say about
it? No, I'm thinking that about wraps up the movie itself.
Well, we didn't talk about the other very important character of the movie, and I want to talk about him a little bit before we wrap it up. And, of course, that's Ned, Peter's best friend.
The less said about him, the better.
You didn't like Ned?
I can see why they needed him to elicit a lot of exposition and basically to trigger a lot of jokes too. But beyond that, was he okay? Not being the Marvel guy, was he like in the? Is he an actual character in the Spider-Man stories? Or
yeah,
he's an amalgam of different characters from the Ultimate Universe and the 616 Universe. You know, Ned Leeds is an actual character who is a friend of Peter's, actually ends up marrying
Betty Brant?
Yeah. And then he does become the Hobgoblin in the comic books through a whole bizarre event. But then there's also, I don't read the Ultimate books as well. Peter's best friend in the Ultimate books.
He actually physically resembles Miles' best friend, Genki, from the current Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, that's what it is. It's Miles' best friend. Yeah. Miles' best friend, Genki, who is his confidant and loves Legos and all that stuff as well. So yeah, like they kind of took the two characters and matched them together. And, he fills the role that I think they have done for most of the Marvel characters in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best friend who, well, I mean, basically none of the other ones really have a secret identity, but knows his secret identity. He's his main confidant. So he fulfills all the exposition pieces that, right. So the actor doesn't have to talk to himself.
Plucky comic.
Yeah. And he's the
Plucky
comic relief. Thank you. Comic relief. So yeah, I kind of like the character. I think the only thing that bugged me was, the whole man in the chair thing reminded me a little too much of the CW shows.
I thought that's what they were kind of teasing, to be honest with you, because all those
have
and it was kind of a little tongue-in-cheeky moment with that, and he said, oh, I gotta be the man in the chair. And I started laughing when I heard that, because, I mean, all those shows hit those same exact points, but they all have that character, and it made me laugh.
Right.
He gets to kind of do that.
Yeah, it's kind of getting old that they all have to have the computer geek in the background helping them out. But just to interject another Easter egg, since you mentioned the word Bucky, you notice that Tony Stark, when they're in the limo with Peter Parker, that he's still sporting a shiner from Bucky Barnes from Civil War.
Yes,
yes,
because it's supposed to be right after they return from the fight.
Yep.
Yes. So.
Okay, so, yeah, sorry.
Just, continuity. They kept it clean. Yes. Yay for Marvel. Yay for Marvel and recognizing the importance of continuity. So anyway, I hope we see Ned continue on in the movies. I like the character. I do like the fact that he has a confidant that he can share his secret with. And now back to the two important things at the very end of the movie.
Okay, wait. All right, is one of those Pepper Potts showing back up again?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure because that made me so happy. I cannot even talk about it.
Really?
But I will.
I don't like Gwyneth Paltrow, so I'm not really sure why that made you happy.
You know, say what you will about, you know, her selling $30 stickers that are supposed to energize your chakras, whatever. I don't know if you guys heard about but that is actually a thing. But, you know, forget about all of that. Forget about the actual actress herself. The fact that they showed that she came back and that they're together, and at the end, he's going to propose. You know, I'm glad that they're not doing the whole, you know, wife dies off screen thing, you know? They're keeping some of these relationships going.
But did he really propose? They kind of left that up in the air.
Well, he asked for the ring from his guy Friday and then walked into
He's been holding on to the ring for 8 years.
Yeah.
So that's an important factor. That means that he's had the ring for 8 years and he still hasn't asked yet.
Okay. He said he'd had it since 2008. So nine years.
9 years. Okay.
Okay. But what came out in 2008? Is that Iron Man?
That might have been the first Iron Man movie.
Iron Man came out in 2008.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So.
Which is, I understand that was what the joke was referring to, but I mean, come on. And then she said, well, no, not that. I'll think of something. Which was almost like saying, no, I'm not going to say yes. So don't do that.
Yeah, it's Tony Stark. Whatever stopped him from doing something he had put his mind to?
Nothing. Exactly. And of course, they showed. Real quick, just to explain, at the end, he ends up at the Avengers base with Tony and Happy, and
did not beat up the Falcon while he was there.
Did not beat up the Falcon. Tony officially asks him to join the Avengers and shows him the suit that he would get if he says yes.
Which was the Iron Spider suit, wasn't it?
It was a take on the Iron Spider suit.
I think it looks more like the suit that he's currently wearing in the most recent Dan Slott books. The Alex Ross redesign.
Okay.
That's what I thought it looked
like. But the thing is, like, when you think about it, it was a rigid suit because it was holding its form.
True.
Which made you think of it's at least some kind of armored suit, and it's like, does that work with somebody who's supposed to be flexible and jumps around a lot? You know? It works for Iron Man, but would it work for Spider-Man? But he turns him down, says no, which goes back to the character arc that JD enjoys so much, and Matt, showing he realizes he has more growing up to do before he can join the Avengers.
Character development.
Yeah. Works for me. We'll take more of that.
So, yes. And then Pete goes home and finds the red and blue sitting in a bag on the bed left there by Tony. And he puts it on and...
Come on. the best line in any Marvel movie I've seen yet. Come on. That had to be like one of the best lines any of you have heard, great. Right? Come on. Great.
When she goes, what the...
What the... Click.
Yes.
And it's done by Marissa Tomei, who's walked in on Peter in the Spider-Man suit going, what the fuck? And boom, that's it. And end credits. It was just, you know, I'm telling you, I did not expect that. And that's just like, she had to find out sometime, but I'm glad that they're not stringing that one out because that kind of situational comedy has been done to death. So, you know, she's Aunt May in the comic books has found out at certain times and then retconned and then found it again and then retconned again, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah. No, she has. So, yeah, it makes sense that she was going to find out. It was an interesting way for her to find out. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that she knows because he could just say, oh, no, this is a Halloween costume I bought. You know, he could lie his way out of it if he wants to. It doesn't
If they go the route of the person doesn't believe their eyes because somebody else tells them a really obvious lie, I slam my head against the desk and keyboard because, that's just like that situation where a person finds out your secret identity and then somehow has their mind erased, you know, twice or three times a season. It just, they can't.
Or by a kiss at the end of the movie.
Oh, DC people don't talk about that.
I also kind of feel like there's a couple things that were, that being one of them, thrown into the movie to kind of gauge fan reaction. And if it's a negative reaction, then they'll somehow retcon it before the next movie. The other obvious one is Zendaya's character Michelle at the end going, oh, my friends call me MJ, you know.
Okay, so are they insinuating that her real name isn't Mary Jane and that Mary Jane will become her stage name or something?
No, what they, if you read the, there was an interview with the director and the producer that came out a couple days ago saying, well, she says it, but she's not necessarily the same MJ from the comics. Basically them covering their butt. So if people react badly to it saying, oh, we don't want her to be Mary Jane Watson, we want Mary Jane Watson, then they'll just say, oh, no, that was just a throwaway line. If people are behind it, then she'll become MJ.
It's like Dark Knight Rises.
I don't know. What
with Robin.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's like Dark Knight Rises with Robin.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
That's a great analogy.
So you're saying they're trial ballooning this?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and then them coming out and saying that, they're basically, yeah, they're admitting that this is a trial balloon. Like, if it bursts, then we'll just pretend it didn't happen. If it flies, oh, yeah, we meant that all along.
Okay. Who here is for Zendaya playing Mary Jane?
I'm okay with that.
No,
I can go either
way. You're okay with
it? I can go either way. They didn't present her in a very Mary Jane light, but whatever. If they can always do something more interesting in another movie with her. I thought she was really kind of underutilized in the movie, to be honest with you, because they made such a big deal about her casting in it, and she really doesn't really do much in the movie. So, you know, I kind of, I'm open to it, mainly because I kind of want to see what she can really do and what her and Tom Holland could do together before, you know, passing judgment. I'm okay with whatever.
So it echoes the ultimate version of Mary Jane, where she went to high school with Peter and was also a nerd and had a crush on Peter.
And they played that up. I mean, there were some scenes where
it, well, they played it up
again.
At the
it was showed and tell. They showed her reacting to him in a way that would indicate she had a crush on him.
Right at the end, especially when he leaves, you know, she's like, she looks back up as he leaves, you know, like watching him walk away. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's anyone's better than Kirsten Dunst.
That's not true. But seeing as how
I just never believed that she was a supermodel.
Well, yeah, but have you seen high school pictures of a lot of supermodels? They usually don't look like supermodels at that point. I mean, I'll give
Kirsten
you
Kirsten Dunst.
What?
I'm talking about Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, okay.
When they were supposed to be adults at that point.
Well, Kirsten Dunst isn't a slouch.
I don't know. I can't get past the Snaggletooth.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Hey, she does. Well, she's got that out of place tooth.
Oh my god.
That, you know, probably stuck around from her playing a vampire at such a young age.
Zendaya, I think, has the range to play a good Mary Jane if they'll give her a chance. That's my take on it. And she did a very good job emoting without lines in this one to start setting that relationship up, or at least the situation that could lead to that relationship later on.
Possibly. I don't know. I wasn't like you, the who said it. They didn't really give her a lot to do in the movie, so I didn't fall in love with her character. You know, there's no connection to her right now, so we'd have to see how they bring her along in other movies.
Well, you know, because at that point, way back when I actually had a teenage daughter and saw a lot of Step It Up episodes because I didn't have a choice, I think she has range. I think she can do it.
Well, speaking of someone who's never seen that show, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I mean, I know JD tapes it every night.
Tapes.
Matt has party tapes. Viewing parties for it. Oh, I'm sorry. DVRs it.
Yeah, you're not an old fogey. All right. So that takes care of the movie end total. Let's talk about the end credit scenes, which I may say in the theater I was in, about half stayed for.
I will say everyone stayed for the first end credit scene and about half stayed for the second one where I was.
I was at a late Sunday night show, so bad example. There was only like maybe 10 people in the theater and everybody stuck around, so small sample size.
So you're saying that late at night they were all true geeks and were going to stay in?
That's what I think, yeah. Or at least fans and you know, kind of knew what they were in for.
Matt, what about you?
I think about 25% stayed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then most of them groaned after the Captain America one.
I did.
Oh, good.
I laughed.
I laughed.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Was it a groan in like, oh, that was such a bad joke? Or was it a groan in, oh, why did I stay, not getting the meta-ness?
I think it was more of a, oh, that was a dad joke.
Well, maybe that's why I liked it.
But it was so meta. It was like...
So to explain to our listeners, the first after credit scene, we see Adrian Toomes in jail, and he's walking in a line, and he meets up with Matt Grogan. Gorgon?
Grogan.
How do you say his name? Grogan. It is G-R-O-G. Who was in the movie earlier. For those who don't know, spoiler alert, he ends up becoming the Scorpion in the comics, as if you couldn't tell by the giant scorpion tattoo on his neck.
Show don't tell.
That's kind of heavy-handed foreshadowing, I think.
Kind of.
And, you know, basically, he confronts Toom saying, oh, you know, I heard you know who Spider-Man is. And he says, no, I'm not. I don't know who he was, because if I knew, he'd already be dead. Which is basically saying, because you spared me, I'm not going to give away your secret.
At not least, just spared not him, gave him a chance to stay with to see his family again, which was the most important thing to him.
Right, but no, he told his family he didn't want them at the trial.
Yeah, but they came to visit him. That was the announcement just as he was walking away from Scorpion, was that, you know, and the look on his face was, you know, I guess kind of gave you the impression that the reason he was holding on to the Peter's secret identity was because he got to see his family, and the family was the most important thing to him.
So, do you guys think that that little scene is helping set up something Sony has been wanting to do since 2002 when they launched the first Spider-Man franchise, and that is get to a Sinister Six, either in a Spider-Man movie or a standalone Sinister Six?
Could be. I mean, like, neither character traditionally associated with the Sinister Six, but
right.
Sure, why not? I mean, they're clearly going to do something with those characters later on.
Right. Because we were talking about... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You can... But
No, go ahead.
They already had three of the characters, three villains already. They had Shocker, Vulture, Scorpion.
Right.
They went through their Shockers pretty quick, though, so the second one might not last.
as long as he doesn't piss off Tombs.
Yeah, well, I mean, they gave us one Shocker. It's like, oh, that's the Shocker. Oh, he's dead. Okay. Actually, there's another Shocker.
And actually, there was four villains. The Tinkerer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about that. I was talking about with some other people earlier today at work. And again, it was like, well, they aren't traditionally the characters who were, at least in the first Sinister Six, but Spider-Man's got such a deep roster of villains, and I'm sure they don't want to repeat anyone, at least not yet, that's been, you know, because again, it's always that issue, they're going to be compared to the guy who just played him 15 years ago, or 12 years ago, if they use Doc Ock again. So yeah, I think they'll just pick different villains. And in fact, I believe, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I heard a rumor that one of the villains in Black Panther is Kraven.
I haven't heard that. Wow, really?
Yeah, I just heard that today, so I don't know how true it is. If anyone's listening...
Say it to yourself.
What?
It doesn't count if you say it to yourself.
No. If anyone listening has also heard this rumor and can confirm or deny it, let us know. Tweet it at us. So yeah, that would be interesting too. It just seems weird too, because it is a strict MCU movie, and Kraven falls under the, falls under the Spider-Man villain clause, you know, but maybe now that they have a working relationship, they can use him. We shall see. And then the final ending, credit scene, the dad joke, as it were, throughout the movie, we got these nice little Captain America videos of him saying, stay in school and listen to your gym teacher and, you know, don't do drugs. And
the old PSA movies they used to show you. I don't even know if they show you in school these days. But back in my time,
well, JD would know.
Yeah, we didn't do those back in when the PSAs. I think they're a dead thing, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. But yeah. So he comes out on the screen and he goes, "I'm here to talk to you about the importance of patience." And sometimes you're patient and you wait around for something to happen and nothing happens. It was just like, he's talking to us, isn't he? So, yeah.
It was Ferris Bueller moment. It was a callback to that.
There's quite a few Ferris Bueller movies, moments in this movie, like the chase through the yards.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which they had to drive the point home by actually showing the clip from Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
A second later.
Well, I mean, like, okay, like, Matt, how old are you again?
27.
Okay, so Ferris Bueller, have you seen the movie?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm starting to get the feeling that a lot of people, like, around your age actually may not have seen it, so they wouldn't get the reference.
I've only seen it recently because I knew that there were some Deadpool moments.
Yeah.
The opposite.
The Marvel obsession with Ferris Bueller continues.
Yeah. Just so you know, Dave, according to the internets, Sony is planning a Kraven and a Mysterio spinoff. So I think Sony still owns the rights to those characters.
Oh, all right. The internet, they're always right.
The tubes. Listen to the tubes.
So real quick, before we wrap it up, guys, I did put a poll out on Twitter. asking people what they thought about the movie. And I just realized that I had set it for 5 days instead of 5 hours. So the poll is still active, people.
You are still batting 1,000 today.
Oh, my God. So the question was, what did you think of the Spider-Man movie? And the four possible answers were best Spider-Man yet, best Marvel film ever, it was okay, and it made me appreciate Batman vs. Superman.
Wow.
Yes.
Dude. All right. So, let's go through then. Go ahead. Who is that?
So the bottom answer is, the bottom percentage was the 9% said best Marvel film ever, which I agree. There was definitely, I liked Civil War better than this. The next answer was at 12% answered, it made me appreciate Batman versus Superman.
How did you, we're going to cut those people off from access to our site, right?
No, we're not, because those are your people, John. Those are DC fans.
That's not true at all.
19% said it was okay, and then, of course, an overwhelming 60% said best Spider-Man yet. Yes, and then we got a response from a Matt Vroom saying he teared up in the movie theater. You know, you put that on Twitter for everyone to see.
I just want everyone to know I'm human. That's all.
Oh, okay.
That even though I am a DC man, I still have a soft spot for Spider-Man.
At Pal Science said, loved it, need to see more of Tom Holland in the role before I can say if I love him more than Toby. And former co-host and good friend of the podcast, Ben Fiore, said, I didn't pick the best Marvel film ever, but I'm considering it as a possibility. So,
all right. The beard is spoken.
Yes. Even when he's not a part of the show anymore, he still sticks his way in here.
Well, he is the beard of knowledge. All right. So do you want to go around and get our...
Yeah, let's give our final thoughts and our ratings. Who wants to go first?
I'll go. Okay. I love the movie. I think it's in... I questioned whether to vote for the best Marvel movie or my favorite Marvel movie. I mean, it hits... I love Spider-Man. It hits me right in the feels of the things I love about the character. And I liked the story. I liked what I saw. I was entertained. Six webs.
Perfect.
Six webs out of 10?
Out of 6. Because I have a weird scale.
Well, so we do it out of 10. So
then I go 10. Then I'm going to go 11 webs, just to be different.
Wait a minute. I'm getting the calculator out because it's been a while since I've done fractions. Damn it.
All right. How about you, Matt?
I one of my favorite Marvel films, probably second after Civil War. So I definitely give it a 7 out of 6 webs.
Wait a minute. Okay, dude, Dave, if you go to imaginary numbers, I swear I'm going to have to hurt you.
I love that these guys are doing their own thing. So go ahead, John.
You mean I have to come up better than that? Jeez. All right, look. First off, I think this is the best Spider-Man out of them all. The action was good. The angst was gone. It was good storytelling with good characters, good actors, and you could tell they had fun, except when Michael Keaton got menacing, and then I'm sure everybody got worried on set. So I think, given Stan Lee's cameo in this, I have to. Let's see. Compared to the rest of, because Guardians of the Galaxy is still like my bellwether for this, for the Marvel movies. And I think I'm going to go, I forget what I gave Guardians, but I think I'm going to give this 8.5.
Okay.
8.5. 8.5 Starks.
8.5 Starks. Out of 7 Starks?
8.5 Starks out of Thursday. There you go.
Oh, God. See what I'm working with here, people? Comedians. Actually, you just reminded me something of reminded me of something, John. Before I give my final thoughts here, I want to say everyone here at Superhero Speak would like to give our heartfelt condolences to Stan Lee.
Yes.
His wife passed away over the weekend, his wife of 70 years. I can't imagine what he must be going through. And just remember, you have a lot of fans out there that love you. All right. That sadness out of the way. Let's get on to my sadness of this movie. So I will say I love the movie. Tom Holland, spot on perfect, I think, as Peter Parker and Spider-Man. I still say Civil War is my favorite Marvel movie. And sorry, guys, Spider-Man 2 is still my favorite Spider-Man movie, especially because of the scene on the L with Doc Ock, I think is, so to this day, still the best Spider-Man fight scene put to film.
Personally, I think the part where he lost all of his powers for no reason was the best part of that movie.
What?
Where he lost his powers.
Anyway, you're not a Spider-Man fan. You don't understand that arc from the movie. So, back off. That being said, again, I look forward to seeing Tom Holland again as Spider-Man in the Infinity Wars 1 and 2, and then, you know, at Homecoming Part 2. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with this universe for Spider-Man that they're building. And the most important question, will we see J. Jonah Jameson? I say we should. Damn it. With all that being said, I am going to give this... I'm going to give it 7.5 capes out of 10. Sorry, guys. You know, I liked it, but I didn't love it. So,
wow. And you call me a critic. Jeez.
Maybe I'm too precious with my Spidey. So before I wrap it up, you guys have anything else you want to add?
Go see Spider-Man. It's entertaining. It's a fun movie.
Yes.
Oh yeah. By all means, go see this. Right. In the past, I've been a real curmudgeon about a lot of these movies, but this one definitely go see.
All right, then. On that note, boys and girls, as always and forever, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Hi, I'm Captain America, here to talk to you about one of the most valuable traits a soldier or student can have: patience. Sometimes patience is the key to victory. Sometimes it leads to very little, and it seems like it's not worth it. And you wonder why you waited so long for something so disappointing. How many more of these? Okay, bye.